another. I tell you, as a first generation on my mom's side to attend college, and last generation probably be able to work full time to afford it, I can honestly tell you that as I sit here today thinking back to those days, I can't imagine in a million years being a finalist for the Board of Regents. This is one of the biggest honors of my life. That being said, I have had an opportunity to go to numerous forums with my opponent, I guess, Robin Gulley, and have listened to her responses. And I'm going to tell you something that will probably surprise you, which is I think you should appoint her. She's fantastic. I've known Robin for a long time. She's got a good heart. She's wicked smart, incredibly communicative, does a phenomenal job on the West St. Paul City Council. I get to work with her as a Dakota County Commissioner. And if you were to ask me who I would vote for if I were sitting on your side of the table, which I have, I'd tell you to vote for Robin. And I say that because when I was on your side of the table, the Board of Regents at the University of Minnesota was 11 old white guys. And I actually got sideways with my own caucus because I supported folks who were not. People of color, women, people of more youthful, not that I'm not youthful, mind you, but Robin has all of those things. And I think you should support her. The only reason you should support me, if you were choosing to do so, is because you want somebody to give them hell and ask a whole bunch of tough questions. And for those that I've served with, you know I do that. Sometimes I've tried to dial it back a little bit, there was no question that I influenced policy by asking a whole lot of tough questions, and frankly, the board needs that right now. They also need somebody who knows the legislature, and you've got a couple people who might be able to bring that. There shouldn't be a board full of former legislators, but you sure as heck ought to have one. And so if that's what you're looking for is somebody that understands the process, I do. But I would not be of any integrity at all if I didn't stick with where I was several years ago when I was on this committee and supporting. And it's not just. And I know my time is up. Just give me a break, Owen. But I'm very sincere in that, and I appreciate the time that you give me. With that, Mr. Chairman, I know you are a stickler for time as well, and I will turn it over to Ms. Gulley.
Thank you, Robin Gulley. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself, and you have 2 minutes.
Thank you so much. It is beyond an honor to be here with you. I have a long history with the University of Minnesota, so this whole process has been an absolute labor of love for me. I've been a student, a graduate assistant, a human rights fellow. I've been an adjunct faculty member for a long time. I've been a member of the faculty union organizing committee. And the experiences that I've had at the University of Minnesota have shaped and changed my life in ways that I could never have imagined. Through my time with the University of Minnesota, I've seen the best that it has to offer. I've taken amazing classes that have changed my life. I've worked with top researchers. I've had the opportunity to get projects funded that I was interested in working on. And as an adjunct faculty member, I was able to bring those things to my students as well. I've also observed the ways that the university could grow and could be better at serving Minnesotans, broadening pathways to educational programming, returning to an affordable tuition model, and ensuring that every campus is safe and accessible, among many other things that I've heard from a lot of you over these past weeks as we've met. The University of Minnesota is our land-grant institution, and it has a responsibility to serve people and communities across the state of Minnesota. My education and work at the U has taken me to so many places. So after serving as an adjunct, I founded a labor college where we work to use education to address racial, economic, and social imbalances of power. And in some ways, that was a response to teaching at the University of Minnesota and seeing how many people we had who could be future leaders but didn't have access to higher education. I do similar work at the Minnesota AFL-CIO now as well. I've also taught at another public institution, Metro State, and have served on the governing board through the Interfaculty Organization. And my students at Metro State are immigrants, refugees, people of color. Most of them are non-traditional, and they're coming back because they have a vision and they want help to get there. And I know my time is up. Just going to say I also serve on the West St. Paul City Council, and I would be honored to have the opportunity to become a member of the Board of Regents and to help take the university to the next space. Thank you so much.
Members, we have 15 minutes for questions. Are there any questions? I see Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you for putting your names in and running for this one of these seats. My first question to both of you would be, as a regent, do you think your duty is to the students or the administration?
We'll go with Representative Atkins first.
Students. And as a derivative of that, Representative, sorry, I can't see it, the frontline employees that aid those students in success.
I'm just going to agree with Commissioner Atkins and say the students, and also say that I was a low-wage worker at the U for many years, and I believe that it's incredibly important that we look at how people are being treated across the university, because we know that there are folks who are treated extremely well, and that is great, but I think that some of that needs to shift to the frontline workers, and so folks who are doing the hard work of maintenance and environmental services and cleaning and also folks who are teaching as adjuncts, which is nearly 50% of the university classes are taught by adjuncts.
Just one last question.
One last question.
Thank you. And this goes just to Representative and Commissioner Atkins. And I know that the university has expressed some interest in purchasing some land in Dakota County. And you're on the Dakota County board. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts would be on if the university moved ahead with or wanted to move ahead with the purchase of that land, what you think your role might be in that process, if any.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Scott, thank you for asking that, because I looked at all those issues, potential conflicts, and the answer is none. The city of Rosa, if I'm thinking the same property that you are, city council members, like my friend or council member Gully, are the ones in control of those land use decisions. The county doesn't have any role in those.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Question for the both of you. What percentage, in regards to the grant, what percentage do you think students should pay for their education? Right now it's 50%. There's a bill proposed at 42%. Had a good meeting today with the grant folks. So I'm just curious your situation.
We'll start with Representative Atkins again.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you for the question, Representative McDonald. I've thought about that a lot, and I wouldn't say it as a percentage per se, but I think what you should do is it should be a function of if you worked full-time over the summer. I actually worked full-time the whole time I was there, but I think that should be the measure. What can a full-time individual earn over the course of that summer to be able to pay for the education at the University of Minnesota, particularly when you have the land grant mission and access to it? And I'll turn it over to Ms. Gully.
Ms. Gully.
So I would completely agree, and I would say that in the late 70s, it would take 200 hours of minimum wage work, which you could easily do in a summer to pay for tuition at the University of Minnesota. And now, just to pay for tuition and nothing else, it would be 2,000 hours of work. So that's gotten completely out of hand, and we're saddling our students with tens of thousands of dollars of debt when they're at the very beginning of their career. And I can speak to this personally as someone who has lived my entire adult life with student debt, and I think that that's unacceptable, and it's crippling our state. So I don't have a percentage, but I would agree with Commissioner Atkins that it shouldn't be more than what you could make in a summer.
Follow up, Mr. Chair.
One follow up, Representative McDonald.
Thank you. As far as the student debt, it is their choice, obviously, right? So just curious, is it 50% or 42%? Because that's the bill that will be in front of us.
Representative McDonald, you ask them both.
Well, then 42%, if those are the choices.
All right.
I don't think that's a fair question, Representative McDonald. Quite honestly, I gave you what I believe is the right answer. And it should be dictated. And you and I are old buddies, so I don't think you're.
I like your answer.
I'm not going to give you art, but
members.
But
let's
I think
try
that should
go through
the
chair as a novel way to have the discussion.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Norr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Council Member, and also Commissioner. The University of Minnesota is in my district, and some people tend to fear having that courageous conversation when we talk about diversity, equity, and inclusion, we tend to fail 100%. And people are not willing to speak up and do the right thing. What will you do different to ensure that we do have a system that works for all students in the state of Minnesota?
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Representative, for your question. First off, you can't have too much diversity. Secondly, is I hope that my actions speak even louder than my words, not just what I did this evening, but in the course of my life, the fashion in which I've conducted myself. And I think that that is the measure of the board, is look at their actions, look at what they do. Obviously, what they say is troubling. Certain members have said some things that I think troubled everybody in this room. But look to the actions and then deliver and measure.
Ms. Cully.
One of the things that I've done in my work outside of the University of Minnesota is I founded New Brookwood Labor College, where we work to address many of those things. So we work to make higher education and those kinds of learning opportunities available to folks who haven't seen themselves in higher ed. And I think that it's a huge problem that so many people don't see a pathway to higher ed and don't feel comfortable on campus and don't see themselves there. And I think, you know, there are a ton of things that we can do. I want to say that the first thing that I would want to do would be to hear from folks who are and who aren't going to the University of Minnesota about why they're making that choice and what's stopping, you know, if they're not coming, what's stopping them from coming? If they are there, what can we do that will make it better? We know that we have an incredible gap in who's ready to go into higher education when they get out of high school in Minnesota. One of the things that we could do that we've done at our labor college is work with students individually and do more individualized education and more working with students on a one-to-one level to make sure that they're doing well as they're going through the University of Minnesota. But I come from my tenet for making these decisions is to think about who benefits and who decides. I think it's incredibly important to recognize that even on the Board of Regents, you're not going to know everything and you're not always going to be the smartest person in the room, and you just have to create pathways for people to talk to you. And something that the Board of Regents has really struggled with that I think is incredibly important. We need to make real pathways for two-way communication with not just stakeholders in the university today, but the people who we want in the university in the future.
Representative Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Chairman Fonte.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This question is for the both of you. In the Senate Higher Education Committee, the first three hearings we had were informational hearings. We heard from college presidents and administrators. Our second hearing, we heard from faculty and staff. And in our third hearing, we had a student day. We were hearing from students about what their needs were. Across the board, in all three hearings, everybody said that the number one priority should be our students. So I guess my question is, have you, any of you, spoken to students or student groups, and what have you learned from them, and what have you heard in terms of what their needs are?
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, Chairman Fate, for the question. Actually, we spoke together with some students, and it was, by the way, I should mention that every decision that the board makes should be run through what is in the best interest of students. We both said the same thing to the students that we met with, and then on an ad hoc basis have met with any number of other students besides. And hearing the same thing. Quite honestly, frankly, it's one preventable headache after another at the university, very much driven by exactly what you're doing right now, which is getting folks here to legislators always have their antenna up. And it's time to get regents out of the boardroom, into the classroom and the lunchroom and the hearing rooms here. So many of the things that they've stepped in. Was that my buzzer going off? It's situations like those that are eminently preventable simply by communicating with students and faculty and frontline workers and not being insulated in the boardroom.
So, as Commissioner Atkins mentioned, we had the opportunity to meet with a lot of students from the U of M Twin Cities campus. I also, in the packet that I handed you, I have a letter of support from the U of M Morris Student Association, and aside from having many conversations with students, again, like on an individual basis, I got a letter of support from the Morris campus and spent a long time talking to the president of the Morris Student Association about what was going on their campus. And it's, you know, in some ways it's a lot of the same issues that we're experiencing in the Twin Cities, and in other ways they often feel like they get the short end of the stick with financing, and it's a much smaller campus, and you know, they have a lot of infrastructure issues that need to be addressed with their buildings and things like that. But at the end of the day, this comes down to hearing from students on a regular basis, and I've seen the way that in really big decisions, the regions haven't created pathways for students to come and talk about the things that matter to them, and that is the absolute number, should be the number one priority, and would be my number one priority as a regent.
Chairman Fate. That's enough. Seeing no more questions, I will then direct the House Clerk to take the roll.
Chair Pulowski.
Robin Gulley.
Chair Pulowski votes Gulley. Vice Chair Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes Gulley.
Wolgamott votes Gulley. Representative Coulter.
Gulley.
Representative Coulter votes Gulley. Representative Hansen.
Hansen votes Gulley.
Representative Hansen votes Gulley. Representative Hicks.
Hicks votes Gulley.
Representative Hicks votes Gulley. Representative Claiborne.
Claiborne Gulley.
Representative Claiborne votes Gulley. Representative McDonald.
McDonald for Atkins.
McDonald votes Atkins. Representative Noor.
Noor votes for Gulley.
Representative Noor votes Gulley. Representative Robbins.
Atkins.
Representative Robbins votes Atkins. Representative Scott.
Atkins.
Representative Scott votes Atkins. Representative Vang.
Gulley.
Representative Vang votes Gulley. Chair Fate.
Robin Gulley.
Chair Fate votes Gulley. Vice Chair Putnam.
Gulley.
Vice Chair Putnam votes Gulley. Lead Duckworth.
Commissioner Atkins.
Lead Duckworth votes Atkins. Senator Farnsworth.
Atkins.
Senator Farnsworth votes Atkins. Senator Kupek.
Kupek votes Gulley.
Senator Kupek votes Gulley. Senator Murphy.
Gulley.
Senator Murphy votes Gulley. Senator Umu Verbatim.
Robin Gulley.
Senator Umu Verbatim votes Gulley. Senator Rorick.
Atkins.
Senator Rorick votes Atkins. So the totals are 8 in the House for Gulley, 3 in the House for Atkins. That's 3 in the House for the Senate, or 3 in the Senate for Atkins, 5 in the House, or in the Senate for Gulley.
A majority of both the House and the Senate having voted for Robin Gulley, congratulations. We will pass your name to the joint convention of the House and Senate. And I'm going to turn the gavel over to Chairman Fate.
Mr. Chairman, may I have just a moment, personal privilege?
Brief.
Very. I put my life on hold the last month. I'm going to go pick up my daughter from the airport. I don't want you thinking I'm picking up my toys and going home because I'm upset. I wanted to congratulate Robin Gulley. She'll be great. And just to note, this is the most Republican votes I've ever gotten in my life.
As a Democrat.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Now we're going to move on to the 3rd Congressional District recommendation to consider. We have 4 candidates that will be speaking for 2 minutes. But before that, are there any nominations for further recommendations for the 3rd Congressional District? Seeing none, we'll be moving on to the in alphabetical order. The first nominee will be William Humphreys. Please, all 4 candidates move to the front, and I believe we might need a 4th chair as well. Thank you, Representative Coulter.
Put the big guy in the middle.
Mr. Humphreys, you'll be first. Please proceed with your 2 minutes presentation.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you for your consideration for me to serve as regent of the University of Minnesota. I'm here today because I'm passionate about the accountability and transparency at the University of Minnesota. My commitment has never stopped. I'm a graduate, mentor, donor, and a lifetime member of the M Club. To clarify, The M Club is for those student athletes who earn a letter for their efforts. People who care about the university and its impact on Minnesota approached me to serve as a regent because, like you, they see changes needed at the U. I agree. A vote for me is a vote for accountability. I will push forth the concerns of our primary stakeholders, the students. Their voices will be elevated on many issues. We must make sure that they are in a safe learning environment on all campuses. I will advocate for increased enrollment on system campuses, including through tuition reductions and more equitable central funding. I will support greater access to the Board of Regents for students and the public, and much better communication with you, our electors. I will work to ensure the university is transparent and is no longer known as the last or the least responsive public entity when it receives DPA requests for accountability. I will be an advocate for change that stop the stream of disappointments from our flagship university and restore it to a position of respect and dignity. I've heard over and over in these halls, that the University of Minnesota needs a fresh perspective. One must go back to Regent Alan Page, elected in 1989 for the last time, a person of color for whom an athletic scholarship opened the door to a life in education not previously open to minority students. Like Mr. Page, I want to bring that voice back to the Board of Regents. this voice was critical 34 years ago.
I'm sorry to interrupt you.
And
I'm sorry to interrupt you, Mr. Humphreys. Your time is up. Please wrap up your presentation.
Oh, I am. I'm almost done. I got a few more words.
Thank you.
And looking at the current tensions at university, it is just as and perhaps more important today. As a University of Minnesota Black student athlete, I've given 100% to the Maroon and Gold. As our state's land grant, our one public university deserves transparent, engaged leadership that puts students first. With your support, I expect to be held accountable to the standard alongside my colleagues. I ask that you give me that opportunity. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation, Mr. Humphreys. Ms. Turner, you're next. Oh, I'm sorry. Next, we'll have Mr. Luther. I apologize.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Nice to see all of you. I grew up on a dairy farm at Fergus Falls, Minnesota, received both my engineering degree and my law degree from the University of Minnesota. I served 20 years here, like many of you are doing today, in the Minnesota legislature, 12 of those years in leadership in the Minnesota Senate. Then I spent 8 years in the United States Congress representing Minnesota there. Since then, I've been involved in a broad range of business activities and mediating disputes with a mediation center. 2 years ago, congressional leadership in Washington asked me to serve, and they appointed me to the board of the Bipartisan Office of Congressional Ethics in Washington, D.C., where I continue to serve today. This is my third time running for the position of regent of the University of Minnesota. 8 years ago, I came within two votes in a joint convention in the legislature of being elected to the Board of Regent. And I thank you, those of you who were there then, for supporting me at that time. You may ask me now, why am I running again? And my answer might be, I'm hoping the third time is the charm. But more seriously, I believe the U needs leadership now more than ever of the kind that I could provide, from people with our background and our experiences, asking the hard, insightful questions mentioned previously already, the willingness to say no to bad ideas, the willingness to insert common sense in board decisions. My goals would be to better fulfill the U's land-grant mission, not just to the metro area, but to all communities and corners of the state, to hold the line on in-state resident tuition and student debt, to reduce administrative overhead, more openness, more input from the public, less power in the chair of the Board of Regents, therefore more accountability for each individual region.
Mr. Luther. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but your time is up. Please wrap up as your presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Over time, I believe these goals will help build more trust and confidence on the part of the legislature and the public, and it'll make for a better you. Thank you.
Thank you for your presentation, Mr. Luther. Will we please have Ms. Turner and Ms. Wheeler both move to the middle? Thank you. Thank you. Next, we'll have Mary Turner.
All right. Mr. Chair and members, my name is Mary Turner. It is great to be here with you guys this evening, and I'd like to start by sincerely thanking all of you for your time and consideration that you have given to me during my run for this candidacy, for this position. I'm excited about the potential opportunity for us to work together. You know, for as long as I can remember, which specifically is 17 years of age, I have had the desire in my heart to speak for those who are afraid to speak. And I've worn many hats in an advocating role as a nurse for my patients at the bedside, as a state voice for being chair of the board of ISAROOM, and also president of Minnesota Nurses Association. And at the federal level, I've been a voice for all of the people on the Biden COVID Equity Task Force. I live for the opportunity to serve not only the students, not only the workers, but the people of Minnesota. Because I have stood, like I said, with my patients. I've stood with communities as they have fought for their hospitals. And this is what I love to do. And this is what I'm good at. And I'm new to all this, and it's a steep learning curve. But I believe that our students in Minnesota should be able to get, the people who come from outside shouldn't have to pay more than the people who live here in Minnesota. Outside students from out of state shouldn't be paying less than what our students pay here. Our students need to have dorms that the roofs don't leak. They need to have elevators that work.
Ms. Turner, sorry to interrupt your presentation. Please wrap up as well.
I've gotten all this information from students, from educators, from workers, because I've been doing my homework for the last 2 months here. So please consider me. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Turner. Next, we have Penny Wheeler.
Thank you very much, Chair Fata, Chair Pawlowski, and members of the combined higher education committees. It's really great, and it's an honor to be here. And thank you so much for sharing so much of your time and your perspectives on the challenges and opportunities of the university. I'm honored to be considered for such a meaningful role that impacts so many lives, in so doing, our whole state. I'm ready to serve, and I'll highlight three reasons why. First, I have a commitment born of gratitude. I've been connected to the University of Minnesota since I graduated from high school, got all three degrees there, and have been a volunteer ever since. I'm committed to who we serve, the students, and why, for their growth and experience, and in so doing, serve the state. My experience. I was fortunate enough to be a physician and then lead a large healthcare organization which is similar in size and complexity to the university and has similar issues. So it's almost the same number of employees, same number of revenue, and issues of safety, affordability, equity and justice, stewardship. So I am ready to deal with that complexity. In addition, I have served as governing. I have deep experience in governing boards. I've served on a dozen boards of directors, and including many community boards and as leadership roles. Lastly, I'll say timing. There is a lot of questions right now looming about the clinical enterprise at the University of Minnesota, especially with the proposed merger between Sanford and MHealth Fairview. I am a candidate who can look at all sides of that issue, having been a provider and a leader of a large healthcare organization. So I'll say that. In addition, I've retired a year ago, so I have the time to commit to this position, and I will give it my all. Lastly, I'll just say that I have a lot of reflection about this. I know it's a meaningful role. I have a love for the land-grant history of the university and its mission to serve all. And I will promise to use my passion and experience to serve this students, this incredible institution, and the state with all I have. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Ms. Wheeler. Next, we'll be going, we'll have 15 minutes for questions and responses. I believe our first question will come from Vice Chair Putnam.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If you could all just please briefly comment on your understanding of the role of the liberal arts in your vision of higher education, especially in the context of a land-grant institution.
I would say to provide equal access
to
opportunity for all students, especially as residents of the state, that they should all be entitled to. And I think it's up to us to make that happen and remove some of the roadblocks that are currently out there.
Mr. Luther.
Well, I'd say it's critical to the University of Minnesota. As I indicated, I was an engineering student in what we called the Institute of Technology at the time. They required us at the university to take a certain number of liberal arts classes. That was a requirement, even of the people in the engineering school. I took those classes, and that's where I learned to love econ, philosophy, psychology, and all of the other liberal arts classes that I was required to take. That, in part, made me interested in going to law school after that because of the liberal arts education I received at the university. And I know that's true of so many other people that I talked to, so I think it's a wonderful question. That is what a good university is about. So thank you.
Ms. Turner.
Mr. Chair, when I went to college, that was a given that you started in liberal arts. And when I went into nursing school, they still required that we take upper division liberal arts classes. And do you know why? Because it helped with our critical thinking skills. It taught us how to think outside the box. So having some sort of liberal education is paramount to the thought process. And so I wholeheartedly agree that if it's not here, it should be brought back.
Ms. Wheeler.
Chair Fateh and Senator Putnam, thank you for the question. I firmly believe that there has to be a holistic view to education. The technical skills I learned as a medical doctor, you know, were great. But caring for others and being in relationship to them, I called more upon my liberal arts education for that. So a combination of the two is necessary to serve holistically the community. Thank you.
Can I add to that?
Mr. Humphreys.
The University of Minnesota.
Mr. Humphreys, can you please speak into the mic?
Oh, yeah. I can speak louder. a better response for your question. When I came to the University of Minnesota, I came here as a part of General College.
Yeah.
And you had to go 2 years in order to go to liberal arts. They put me in liberal arts, but coming from the Detroit public school system, I was not equipped to handle the workload. I needed to learn how to study. And so when they did away with General College, if they didn't have it, I would have never survived. So I learned how to study. I ended up getting straight A's because I had to learn. And then I moved over to the liberal arts. And I'm thankful to the university for that opportunity. Otherwise, would be another casualty in Detroit.
Thank you, Mr. Humphreys. Representative Noor.
Thank you, Chair. You know, almost all of you spoke of privilege that you went to the college and whatnot. You know, when we talk about the underrepresented, underserved communities, you know, giving the people who need the voice, lifting people up, what will you do different, as I asked before, to make sure that we provide opportunities to those who we don't give them? Because it's more intentional. It has to come from the heart that you believe in something and you pursue what you believe in. How do you address the issue of equity and inclusion and also diversity and also making sure students reflect who we are? And if we don't lift them up, we will fail the entire state. So what will you do different?
Same order, Mr. Humphreys.
Oh, same order. Oh, okay. Remember, during college.
Please speak into the microphone, Mr. Humphreys. I'm sorry. Thank you.
Okay, in terms of addressing the D&I, in order to, we have to empower people. We have to make that our purpose statement that we're going to do, and we have to hold people accountable for how their numbers work out. When oftentimes I say in business, in corporations, when they talk about D&I, they're talking about the low-hanging fruit. Low-hanging fruit meaning that I think it's represented at the University of Minnesota where the majority of your janitors and stuff are minorities, right? But the higher you go, the less we're represented. I say we need to examine that and put forth policies that hold them accountable for the job performance in terms of fulfilling the D&I statement. And being a minority, I'm always subject to someone else's decision. So it feels good right now to be in a position where I can actually control some of the outcomes. If I'm elected to the board, I can make a change. Otherwise, once again, I'm subjected to someone else's decision. So we have to be a part of it.
Mr. Luther.
Well, it's a great question. I think I would redouble the efforts that I've made in the past. To me, the best indicator of future performance is your past track record. And I can tell you that in my work in the legislature, I supported as strong as I could the minority councils that we funded. I was on the finance committee. And when I had an office in Congress, I had a strong representation from minorities on my office, both in Washington and here in Minnesota. And I remember specifically one biracial African American that I hired straight out of the University of Minnesota to be my press secretary in Washington. And when I left Congress, he went on to greater positions than serving for just a congressman. He went to the president's office. And the day that he ran a press conference for President Obama, he called me on the phone and said, "Thank you for giving me my first job out of the University of Minnesota, because I just ran a press conference for the President of the United States." But all I can say in response to that question is I would redouble my efforts to do what I did when I served in Congress. Thank you.
Ms. Turner.
I would have to reflect on the Mr. Chair, the activities that I have been doing as president of Minnesota Nurses Association, having started 7 years ago our racial diversity equity. First it was a task force, now it's a committee. This is a committee that is designed to improve DEI in the nursing profession. And then in 2018, when I became chair of the Somali community organization, Izarun, this gave me even a better opportunity to actually be among different cultures, be among the people in a whole different way. And, you know, in some of my getting ready for, you know, this opportunity, I have been there. I have met the workers and heard their pleas. I have spoken to the students. And I'll tell you, the one thing I do as a nurse, and I do it the best, is I listen and I act, because that's what you do when you're an intensive care nurse. You listen and you act. And so whatever way that is, whether it's going to HR on the behalf of people, or it's finding ways in the communities and at the government to increase the ability for more students of different cultures to go to school, I'm going to do it, because it just needs to be done.
Thank you, Ms. Turner. Ms. Wheeler.
Yeah, Chair Fateh and Representative Noor, thank you so much for the question. It's near and dear to my heart, and I think it requires an intense intentionality to, first of all, look at your own unconscious bias And I have personal and professional reflections on this. Personally, I am a member of the LGBTQIA community. I think I got all the letters right. I'm trying to do that well. And I know what it's like to have been a suffered oppression. I've been with the same woman I love for 27 years, but married for 8. You know, I know a little bit about that, and I think that I would be the first one to serve on the Board of Regents, as I understand as well. So I look at that personal experience, and then professionally, I've tried to do what I can, and I have. There's so much more to be done in my leadership to look at, gosh, we have to look at what we can do as a provider of care, what we can do as a purchaser of services, what we can do as an employer, what we can do as a community member, and let's put measurable outcomes for all of those, and that thing that we're doing is actually now naturally recognized. So hopefully that my past and commitment to this and my personal understanding of it to a degree, to just a degree, so much more to do, but requires a lot of intentionality. So thank you.
So I have a question.
Mr. Humphreys.
I play football, so a lot of stuff triggers me at times. But
Mr. Humphreys, please speak into the microphone.
Again. I was reminded of a conversation that I had with Governor Walz. Governor Walz said, because I met him and I was, you know, I did all the pleasantries. Governor Walz, and then I started to tell who I am, and I started telling him all that I've done. He looked at me and said, quit. You don't have to justify your existence. And it struck me like, yeah, I do. I feel like I always have to. I always have to say, I did this, I own that, I did that, that. He said, no, just you as a man is enough. And I walked away from that. I felt really empowered, like, yeah, you're right. I've done a lot. I don't need to justify who I am. And so it would be nice if we, these conversations about D&I, we didn't have to have them, because within all of us, we have it to make the right decisions, to accept people who they are. And we don't have to be intentional about, you come over here, you come over here. It's just like, come, all. And that's how I live my life.
Thank you, Mr. Humphreys. Are there any other questions from committee members? Seeing none, the Senate clerk will take the roll.
Chair Fateh.
Mary Turner.
Fateh votes Turner. Vice Chair Putnam.
Turner.
Putnam votes Turner. Ranking Member Duckworth.
Humphreys.
Duckworth votes Humphreys. Senator Farnsworth.
Humphreys.
Farnsworth votes Humphreys. Senator Kupak.
Wheeler.
Kupak votes Wheeler. Senator Murphy.
Turner.
Murphy votes Turner. Senator Umu-Verbaten.
Mary Turner.
Umu-Verbaten votes Turner. Senator Rarick.
Humphreys.
Rarick votes Humphreys. Chair Plowski.
Mary Turner.
Plowski votes Turner. Vice Chair Walgamott.
Walgamott votes Turner.
Walgamott votes Turner. Lead O'Neill. No. Absent. Representative Coulter.
Turner.
Coulter votes Turner. Representative Davids. Absent. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, Turner.
Hansen votes Turner. Representative Hicks.
Turner.
Hicks votes Turner. Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne, Turner.
Cleborne votes Turner. Representative McDonald.
Luther.
McDonald votes Luther. Representative Noor.
Noor votes Turner.
Noor votes what?
Mary Turner.
Turner, thank you. Noor votes Turner. Representative Robbins.
Humphreys.
Robbins votes Humphreys. Representative Scott.
Humphreys.
Scott votes Humphreys. Representative Vang.
Turner.
Vang votes Turner. Chair, in the Senate, there's one vote for Wheeler, 3 votes for Humphreys, and 4 votes for Turner. In the House, there is 1 vote for Luther, 2 votes for Humphreys, and 8 votes for Turner.
So there's no majority among the senators present, and we will now move to a second round of voting. One moment, Chris. I'm sorry, just a moment while council is conferring. Thank you so much for that. Thank you for your patience. Pursuant to rule, the candidates receiving no votes and the least votes are dropped. So we'll be moving on to the second round between Mr. Humphreys and Ms. Turner. The Senate clerk will take the roll.
Chair Fateh.
Turner.
Fateh votes Turner. Vice Chair Putnam.
Turner.
Putnam votes Turner. Ranking Member Duckworth.
Humphreys.
Duckworth votes Humphreys. Senator Farnsworth.
Humphreys.
Farnsworth votes Humphreys. Senator Kupak.
Turner.
Kupak votes Turner. Senator Murphy.
Turner.
Murphy votes Turner. Senator Umu-Verbaten.
Mary Turner.
Umu-Verbaten votes Turner. Senator Rarick.
Humphreys.
Rarick votes Humphreys. Mr. Chair, there are 3 votes for Humphreys and 5 votes for Turner.
Oh, House.
We vote again on that one? Okay. Chair Pawlowski.
Mary Turner.
Pawlowski votes Turner. Vice Chair Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes Turner.
Wolgamott votes Turner. Lead O'Neill. Absent. Representative Coulter.
Turner.
Coulter votes Turner. Representative Davids. Absent. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, Turner.
Hansen votes Turner. Representative Hicks.
Turner.
Hicks votes Turner. Representative Cleborne.
Cleborne, Turner.
Cleborne votes Turner. Representative McDonald.
Humphreys.
McDonald votes Humphreys. Representative Neuer.
Neuer votes Mary Turner.
Neuer votes Turner. Representative Robbins.
Humphreys.
Robbins votes Humphreys. Representative Scott?
Humphreys.
Scott votes Humphreys. Representative Vang?
Turner.
Vang votes Turner. Mr. Chair, in the Senate, there are 3 votes for Humphreys and 5 votes for Turner. In the House, there are 3 votes for Humphreys and 8 votes for Turner.
With the conclusion of the votes, we have now nominated Mary Turner for the 3rd Congressional District, so congratulations.
Thank you, Chair and Committee.
Thank you. Congratulations. I'll now pass the gavel back to Chair Pawlowski.
Thank you, Chair Fateh. We now have the 8th Congressional District. We have 2 candidates that were recommended by the Region Candidate Advisory Council, Susan Cohn and Tad Johnson, if they would come up. And while they're coming up, I will ask, are there any nominations for the 8th Congressional District? Seeing no nominations, we will then welcome the 2 candidates. And we will start in alphabetical order as we did before. Susan Cohn, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record, and you have 2 minutes.
Yes, Dr. Sue Cohn. For the region position, District 8, and my presentation. My education is more diverse than others, as you might see. My career path has taken me through four major land grant systems, allowing me to understand education from the community college level, the state college systems, non-land grant state universities, world-class private universities, and culminating in a PhD that combines science and public policy research. This diversity of experience gives me a deep understanding of different approaches to educational excellence. The experience also tells me how a major university can interact effectively with community colleges and state universities. The Board of Regents needs knowledgeable scientific management skills to lead a Research One university, and I can provide that experience and educational background. Professional programs can only exist because the basics of science and liberal arts are well supported. Because I don't have all the answers, and I value diverse opinions, I pledge to meet monthly with student groups from all of the campuses when I become a regent. That will include undergraduate, graduate, and postdoctoral groups. I will also meet with faculty, staff, and agricultural and commodity stakeholders around the state. Furthermore, I promise to attend as many relevant hearings as possible at the state capitol throughout my tenure. Thank you.
Thank you. Ted Johnson, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you. Honorable chairs and members of the committee, I'm Tad Johnson. When Governor Walz's office called me last summer and invited me to serve as a regent at the University of Minnesota, it was the honor of a lifetime. The university trained me to be an attorney, and as a member of the Boys Fort Band of Chippewa, I've used that education to serve tribal governments, Native Americans, and Minnesotans. Also, the university and my sister saved my life when its outstanding surgeons gave me a kidney transplant 26 years ago. Hence, I owe my life and my livelihood to the university. I have just attended three meetings of the Board of Regents, just long enough to make some mistakes, and I've learned a lot and will continue to learn. In my life, I've been a congressional staff director, the head of a small federal agency, a university professor, and a director for the entire U of M system. With a lifetime of public service, any success I've had along the way was because I consulted in advance with the groups who would be impacted by my decisions. The Regents' decision-making process is not transparent enough. Right now, advanced consultation with students, faculty, and legislators doesn't happen. That has to change. As regents, we must be accountable to those we serve, including the taxpayers, which means listening to those who pay the bills and pay the tuition. Regents should be servant leaders. As a former professor, I had a front row seat to the struggles that students face. Their needs versus the needs of the administration must be our highest priority in every decision we make. If I am selected, I will do my best to cast each vote with integrity, honesty, and information, and that means listening and learning. So it is my hope that you'll consider me strongly as you vote, and I hope to continue to serve in this seat for the 8th District and the state of Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. We have 15 minutes for questions. Members, anyone has a question? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Campus security is a concern that I've paid a lot of attention to in the last few years. And so I just wanted to get both candidates' feedback on what they think the priorities should be in solving some of the campus security issues.
We'll start with Ms. Cohn.
Yes, it's a great question, and it's one we've been really dealing with for the last couple of years in the Twin Cities area. And I've talked to a number of people about this. We have great resources on campus here. We have surrounding communities with a lot of youth that need to be involved. We have a school of social work, psychologists, and so on. We can get involved in organizations, get these people busy. That will cut down on some of the thefts that we're running into and unsafe conditions in Dinky Town. I myself had a company for a number of years there until the property was bought out in Dinky Town. Fantastic place and a good meeting place for a lot of individuals. and had a wonderful grocery store there. Now we no longer have the grocery store, and we do have the surrounding insecurities that we're feeling. So not only will we work with our surrounding communities, we need to also work with our campus security and allow them to have a connection with the students and get to know them. So we need team building experiences with these all these different groups and the business community. And we found that quite successful as an undergraduate and a student leader at University of California, Riverside. We had our African American forum building burnt down by an external source. And it was a very scary time for the students. We were able to bring together all of these people in the community and the business people and work out and have the dialogues and have the kind of community campus resources that we needed to make it a safer place and supportive and bridge to the outside business communities. So these things can be done, but it takes a lot of work. And we have a culture right now in the Twin Cities and some of the police departments that needs to be changed because they need to feel a connection, a stronger connection with our university. And I think it can be done. And we have some resources at the university that can help build some of these programs and work with the surrounding area.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, Senator Scott. I think this is one of the most important issues facing the university right now. I got this idea from you, actually. I have overseen 32 police officers post-certified and federally deputized on the Mille Lacs Reservation. Our best move was to create a atmosphere of community policing where the police officers knew the community. They knew who was a problem, who was not, who might have a disease, who might be intoxicated. And getting to know, having the police get to know the students, having the students get to know the police. And you gave me the example of a student having her computer and her phone stolen. There was no ombudsman to work as a go-between she was counted as late for her courses, and she had lost all of her notes, and she was going to be late for her assignments and exams. And so consequently, I thought that was a very good idea, which I try to listen to what I heard from all of you folks. So that is a top priority. And working with all the law enforcement entities in the greater metro area, but also Duluth, Morris, Crookston and Rochester, there needs to be that community policing mentality at all of the campuses. Thank you.
Senator Murphy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. We are talking about a university system, and I'm wondering how you approach making sure each of the campuses in that system are vibrant, attracting students, and building our future.
Ms. Cloninger.
Did you want me to go ahead?
Yes, you can go first.
Yeah, thank you very much for that question. I think more does need to be looked at among the campus-wide systems and the connections between the different campuses. And one of the things I'd like to see is more 21st century technology buildings, and that we have the ability to share courses electronically simultaneously or online, so we can build out some of these course offerings at some of these other campuses and have the ability to transfer from one campus to another, depending on if you're at the bachelor's level or a master's or a PhD degree. And I think this is something that we should further look into on the Board of Regents, how we can build up some of these other campuses and how we can share our resources better.
Mr. Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Senator. So in order to have more vibrant campuses, I think we need to ensure that enrollment continue. Right now, it's going down nationally. And so the best advice we got on this was going up to the University of Minnesota Morris. And I was supposed to go pretty much by myself with two other regents, and six regents came with us because of comments that had been made at a previous regents meeting. And we sat down face-to-face with the faculty, and they said, our enrollment is down because you guys are not marketing us very well. They said, when you Google, if you're in Illinois or Virginia, and you Google, not Virginia, Minnesota, but the state or California, you Google the University of Minnesota, you get the Twin Cities campus. So you don't get the things that are done at Crookston, Morris, Rochester, Duluth, the outstanding online programs at Crookston, the outstanding liberal arts education you can get at Morris, the wonderful health programs you can get at Rochester, and whether it's engineering, business, other things, UMD does in an outstanding way. So we need to strongly market the entire system in order to boost the enrollment and keep it a healthy campus and keep it a healthy enrollment. Thank you.
Representative Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to set the record straight. The conversation about the surrounding neighborhood and also the communities about the safety, I'm raising my four young kids there. I live right next to the University of Minnesota. Sometimes the perception that we create here is what goes around. If my neighborhood is not safe, I'm not going to be raising my four kids. If we're committed to making sure that we have safety at the campus, we need to invest. Invest in the communities surrounding the University of Minnesota. Invest in multiple tools that we have, including law enforcement. Mm-hmm. But I think the conversation trying to dance around and say there's a problem with the neighborhood, there's a problem with that, yes, we do have some challenges. But I want everyone, including the regents and everybody, to come to the table and create an inclusive system. What will you do different? Because sometimes we tend to talk about issues. How will you approach this from the perspective of including everyone surrounding the University of Minnesota?
Ms. Cohn.
Well, I would say I would definitely want to hold, the boards should hold their hearings so that we can get more people involved. I need surveys, information, expert opinions. I really do need a lot more information to be sure that we are really got the right information. You know, a perspective like that is just very valuable to us. And if it's not coming through to the board, that is a problem. So we need to open it up for more comments, perhaps some comment forums online, so that this information come in. We can do outside surveying. We can also have hearings. I want to open it up, because that's the only way we're going to develop our relationships and develop the public trust that we can work together.
Mr. Johnson.
Mr. Chairman, and I associate myself with Ms. Cohen's remarks, and what I've been getting from students after talking with both students at Morris especially the Twin Cities campus, they find what I'm getting is comments about safety quite a bit all around. And people, they're concerned about the fact that people may not be attending the Twin Cities campus because of what appears to be a substantial crime problem. So, and so I think what we don't do enough of is going out and addressing the students that live in the area, whether it's the Twin Cities or the other campuses, and ascertaining what their needs are. So I hear things from students saying that they find Dinkytown to be a food desert. We need to help on that. But I think the main thing we need to do is hold listening sessions. And I was just chatting with another regent. I said, is there anything that would stop you and me from going out and just listening? Apparently there's not. It's just something we should be doing, holding listening sessions. And When I worked in Washington, we did a lot of that. We just went out and heard the problems and heard the suggestions. And the best ideas usually came from out there. They didn't come from, in this case, the Board of Regents or those in Morrill Hall. They came from the people that are experiencing crime and living in a neighborhood that may be unsafe. And we need to work together with both you folks as legislators and the local community to figure our way through this problem of the neighborhoods that the various campuses are in and the troubles that students are facing on all campuses. Thank you.
Representative Nuri, you want to follow up?
Just wanted to mention, Mr. Chair, sometimes the U of M and the Regents and everyone else, they tend to forget this is a whole system. They don't want to go outside their boundaries. And they'll say, this is our section. We don't care about some of the things that are happening just across the street. So we need to figure out how we can collectively and inclusively work together on this issue. We don't want to pass the back to somebody else. It's all our responsibility here, whether in this body or the regions and all the entities who are involved in that process. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mm-hmm. Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hesitate to ask this question because my mother always said you should never should on anyone. But what do you think should be the healthy balance between the state's investment on a student and the student's investment in their own education?
Ms. Yeah. Cohn, and we're down to 2 minutes of the 50.
Okay. I actually think Joe Atkins had a good point, and that is students should be able to make their money in the summer and be able to pay a lot of the tuition. And that's the way it was before. As an undergraduate, I constantly did that. I understand the debt problem, the 10 years of paying the loans off. And students have talked to me, and it's really a concern, and it's putting them off from going on to college. They're thinking, I'm just going to get a job right now to make money. That's going to affect our enrollment. So that's why I cannot talk on whether we're doing percentages, or what at this point until I have seen all the information, how your numbers are calculated and how it's related to enrollments. And then I can make a better decision on that. But I definitely think that we need to give them a break at this point. And of course, the university can also look into some things. And we have no interest deferred loans. We have pay it forward things that some of the other universities are trying now. We can look at make sure the grants get grants in the university that have no overhead. It gives us some more money coming in. So there are a few things here we can kind of look to help the students. The problem is, if you just give them scholarships, that doesn't cover everything. That covers a small group, And so you're constantly battling that issue. And then, okay, community college. The students may go free to go in the community college, but how do we get them from community college to
members,
four-year school?
The 15 minutes
that
has
is
expired.
A big problem right there.
So we will, I'm sorry, Mr. Johnson, but
now
15 minutes are up. We will now move to a vote, and I will instruct the House clerk to take the roll.
Chair Pawlowski.
Pawlowski votes Tad Johnson.
Pawlowski votes Johnson. Vice Chair Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes Johnson.
Wolgamott votes Johnson. Representative Coulter.
Johnson.
Representative Coulter votes Johnson. Representative Hansen.
Hansen votes Johnson.
Representative Hansen votes Johnson. Representative Hicks.
Johnson.
Representative Hicks votes Johnson. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn votes Johnson.
Representative Cleavorn votes Johnson. Representative McDonald.
Johnson.
Representative McDonald votes Johnson. Representative Neuer.
Neuer votes Johnson.
Representative Neuer votes Johnson. Representative Robbins.
Johnson.
Representative Robbins votes Johnson. Representative Scott.
Johnson.
Representative Scott votes Johnson. Representative Vang?
Johnson.
Representative Vang votes Johnson. Chair Fate?
Johnson.
Chair Fate votes Johnson. Vice Chair Putnam?
Johnson.
Vice Chair Putnam votes Johnson. Lee Duckworth?
Johnson.
Lee Duckworth votes Johnson. Senator Farnsworth?
Johnson.
Senator Farnsworth votes Johnson. Senator Kupak?
Johnson.
Senator Kupak votes Johnson. Senator Murphy?
Johnson.
Senator Murphy votes Johnson. And Senator Umu Verbaten?
Johnson.
Senator Umu Verbaten votes Johnson. Senator Rarick?
Johnson.
Senator Rarick votes Johnson. Chair, in the House, we have 11 votes for Johnson, and in the Senate, we have 8 votes for Johnson. In the House, we have 0 votes for Cohen, and in the Senate, we have 0 votes for Cohen.
Mr. Johnson, congratulations. We will forward your name to the Joint Convention. And with that, I will turn the gavel over to Chair Fonte.
Thank you, Chair Pulaski. Finally, we have the at-large district recommendation to consider. We have 4 candidates so far, Val Allerswald, Mike Burns, Rebecca Siegmeier, as well as Flora Yang. Before we move into the candidate presentations, I will stop to ask if there are any nominations for further recommendations for the at-large district. Representative Vang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think we've had a lot of great candidates have come before us. It's always a good problem to have when we have good candidates to choose from. However, I think there's one candidate that has stood out, and I think she has proven herself to be a good leader and can take the U of M to where we would like to go. So I would like to nominate Penny Wheeler for the at-large seat.
Representative Vang nominates Penny Wheeler as a candidate for the at-large seat. Such nomination requires 2 hands from senators and 3 hands from representatives. Members, please raise your hands if you support Representative Vang's nomination. There being sufficient support, Penny Wheeler has been added as a candidate for the at-large seat. Are there any further nominations? Ms. Wheeler, you may choose if you decide to join for another round of for another presentation as well as questions. So we'll go into 2-minute presentations in alphabetical order of last names. The first nominee will be Val Allerswald.
All right, thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, thank you for the opportunity tonight. I am the University of Minnesota alum with a degree in agricultural education. If I was to summarize why I'm running for the University of Minnesota Board of Regents, I would summarize it as this. I believe in the transparency in the decision-making process. I believe that there should be input from and accountability to all stakeholders. I believe that there should be a commitment to an affordable and quality student experience. With nearly 30 years of experience in the educational field and with an extensive network in the agricultural community, I believe that I am uniquely qualified and positioned to help build back the partnerships and the trust of many Minnesotans, especially those in greater Minnesota. I desire to play a role in reversing the trends of decreasing enrollment at 3 of our campuses, Crookston, Duluth, and Morris, and through new and innovative approaches. I believe the 5 campus system is a tremendous asset to our state, and yet there has been a reduction in its ability to attract and serve students statewide. I desire to ensure that the University of Minnesota fulfills its land-grant university mission, and that it is at the cutting edge of research, including but not limited in the areas of agriculture, medical, and technology. I chose to run because I believe in the university and its ability to transform lives, to prepare students for meaningful and rewarding careers, to inspire them to be entrepreneurs, encourage them to solve the important problems that face our society, while providing them with opportunities to develop into the leaders that our state, the nation, and the world so desperately desires. I thank you for your consideration tonight.
Thank you, Ms. Oswald. Next, you have Mr. Burns. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committees. My name is Mike Burns. For 17 years, I was the head coach for the men's gymnastics team here at the University of Minnesota. I bled maroon and gold for those 17 years. I didn't go to school here, but I feel like a newly bred Minnesotan. In 2020, the Board of Regents had a 7-5 vote to drop the men's gymnastics program, the men's tennis program, and the men's indoor track and field program. Prior to that decision, I was very unengaged with what was going on at the Board of Regents level. I was just doing my job, and I'd like to think I did a pretty good job at it. But in that 7-5 vote, it impacted me. You know, prior to that, their decisions didn't impact me that much, so I didn't have that engagement. When I became directly impacted, I got very much engaged. And my emotions drove my actions. And my actions helped me to decide to submit my name to become a member of the Board of Regents. You know, we tried to fight the decision, but, it kind of fell on some deaf ears. So, in these last 2.5 years, I've kind of watched how the Board of Regents operate. I've probably been to as many Board of Regents meetings as every one of the Board of Regents members. I've been to a lot of them, and I've seen how it works. I have a pretty good understanding of how it works, and I have a pretty good understanding of how it doesn't work. And, those are the kind of things that I feel like I could help bring to the table is kind of a unique perspective that I have. I'm on campus every day. I work with students every day. I kind of have a sense of what's going on at the university because of my association. I have relationships with members of the faculty. I have relationships with members of the UMPD. I'm even on a first-name basis with President Joan Gable. So I think I'm uniquely qualified because of the time and energy and dedication I've put in to the University of Minnesota. And I'd like to feel like I'm qualified, and I'd like your support in getting on the Board of Regents. Thank you.
Ms. Siegmeier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the Joint Committee. My name is Rebecca Siegmeier, and it is a great honor to be an at-large Regent finalist. I hope to have the opportunity to share my knowledge, skills, and work ethic in setting the course for the University of Minnesota over the next 6 years. The valuable conversations I've had with many of you are appreciated. Thank you for sharing your hopes and concerns and for allowing me to share mine. I will bring broad experience to the Regent role. 16 years in the private sector where I managed a multi-million dollar workforce budget and developed project performance analytics at Best Buy. 11 years in the nonprofit sector where I built the SciTech internship program and connected more than 2,500 college STEM students to valuable hands-on work experience in nearly 600 companies across Minnesota. I'm trained as a certified career services provider and helped underrepresented students learn the job search skills they need to compete and thrive. Governing experience as vice chair of the City of Grant Planning Commission and multiple board roles with the League of Women Voters and other civic organizations. And being part of the University of Minnesota community for 40 years, once as an athlete, twice as a student, as the parent of a current student, a fan, a donor, and a volunteer. I'm proud to be an alum of the University of Minnesota and its success in providing a world-class education, life-saving research, and valuable community outreach. But there is work to do. As a regent, I commit to increasing transparency, responsiveness, and accountability. I will contribute my unique background in workforce development, governing experience, and passion for helping students reach their full potential to the issues facing the board. Thank you.
Ms. Wheeler.
Yeah, thank you, Chair Fate, and thank you very much, Representative Vang, for the second chance at this nomination. Because I've been able to address you before, I will leave this to Candidate Yang.
Thank you, Ms. Wheeler. Ms. Yang.
Good evening, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Flora Yang
For context, I currently serve as the undergraduate student body president at the Twin Cities campus, and I am a former ex officio student representative to the Board of Regents. And I think that it's really these experiences and my day-to-day life as a student on campus, quite literally since 2016, have allowed me to witness and reflect upon what is missing from the board. And that's namely the lack of prioritization of the student perspective, in addition to the absence of transparency in decision-making and accountability towards the greater state of Minnesota. And I think that we can all agree that students are the heart and soul of the University of Minnesota, but our perspective is continuously neglected on the board. And as a regent, I think I can empower those voices, prioritize them, and ensure that concerns articulated by the university's main stakeholders are addressed in all aspects of board decision making. And in terms of transparency and accountability, there's a serious shortage of question askers and an overabundance of answer givers on the board. We need someone who can ask the right questions at the right time to ensure that decisions are made only after extensive consultation with key stakeholders beyond just senior level administrators. Over the past few years, I have led advocacy initiatives on issues such as student financial burdens, mental health, basic needs, and served on boards like the Alumni Association, the President's Initiative for Student Mental Health, the Strategic Safety Advisory Council, and many others. And during that process, I gained a unique understanding of the workings in the board and its decision-making processes, acquired extensive institutional knowledge, as well as fostered positive professional relationships with students, employees, parents, faculty, administrators, and the current Board of Regents. I'm eternally grateful for the University of Minnesota for providing me with the education and the opportunities to make me who I am today, and I'm deeply committed to ensuring that the university remains a vibrant, inclusive, and successful world-class public land-grant institution that benefits the entire state of Minnesota. And the foundation of our decision-making ought to be transparency, accountability, and the needs and perspectives of the students and that the university serves. And I think that I'm in a very unique position to make that happen. And with that, thank you so much for your consideration, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Thank you, Ms. Yang. We will now move into our 15-minute question and answer portion. Do we have any questions from committee members? Representative Scott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. If nobody else is going to go, I guess I will. We've talked in the legislature over a number of years about the administrative expenses at the University of Minnesota. And so I think that, you know, and the conflict that that might have with lowering the cost of education for the students themselves. And so if you could speak to what you might do as a regent to hold accountable and keep better track of those administrative costs. I'd love to hear an answer. Thanks.
And this is for everybody. We'll begin with Ms. Arswell.
All right. Mr. Chairman, committee members, thank you for the question. You know, I think what really surprised me was the rate at which that the administrative costs have gone up without really building the case for support and to really justify whether that was there. I know that in studying the University of Minnesota, there's different groups that they view as comparables or peer groups to compare, and that shifts from issue to issue, and that concerns me to some extent. So as we think about administrative costs, I think of it, it is a public school, it is a public university, and I do believe that they should be compensated, but I think that there should really be the case for support, especially when we're seeing the tuition costs go up at that rate as well. So it concerns me that some of those decisions were made before the contracts were put in place for frontline workers and others. It sets a wrong precedent. I think we need to elevate the entire university community, and that that certainly was kind of a concern for me when those changes were made in advance of other addressing other issues. Thank you.
Mr. Burns.
Great question. Thank you, Chair and Representative Scott. I've been thinking about this a lot because the University of Minnesota is kind of known for a little bit of a bloated administrative budget line item. So what I would do, I would start taking a look at the people that are hired to be in these positions. They must be really good at what they do because they're making a lot of money, right? And when they do things like, let's hire a consulting firm to do a study and a survey and whatnot, How many millions of dollars are they spending on consulting firms where they could just do it themselves because apparently they're the experts in their field? So that's the first thing I would look at. How are we spending the money that comes from the state of Minnesota? And how is it being utilized, and how is it maybe not being utilized properly? That's where I would start, and probably would find a lot of very interesting figures when I start looking through that budget.
Ms. Siegmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Scott, I would like to see the administrative costs consolidated as much as possible across the campuses. So things like human resources, accounting, admissions, things that can be consolidated, it would be great to see that happen. I also would agree with Mike that we've got the Carlson School of Management, and I would assume that they are learning things like Learn Six Sigma, where you can look at processes and figure out how to make things more efficient. So I would certainly think that the university could do that without hiring any consultants, and it would be great experience for the students to get some real-world experience. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Wheeler.
Yeah, thank you for the question. Thank you, Chair Fateh, and thank you, Representative Scott. I think that you, at the end of the day, it's like what contributes to affordability for students. So if you do everything through the lens of what contributes to that affordability, you have to scrutinize administrative costs and the leadership's outcomes at the university. I think that's a piece of the puzzle. I think to the points already made, too, there are many ways to decrease inefficiencies by doing things collectively together. So I think you have to look at the cost structure holistically, including those costs that administration bears.
Thank you. Ms. Yang.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and thank you, Representative Scott, for that question. I definitely agree that, especially with the change in the definition of administrative costs recently at the University of Minnesota, that this should be something that we're considering. And I also agree with Candidate Arsvold that it was a concern for me that the president's pay increase prior to people like Teamsters and student workers who are there keeping the university running before they received equitable pay. So that's definitely a point of concern. I think it speaks largely to the transparency and accountability issue that we see on the board currently. Transparency and accountability are essential for the Board of Regents to operate effectively, and I think that these principles promote openness, they promote honesty, to promote responsibility, which are critical for building trust with stakeholders and the rest of the Minnesota community. There are also other issues like lack of consultation, security, and sports cuts that have been considered. And so I think that what really needs to be done is we need to start asking those questions that challenge each other, even if we might agree with the perspectives of our fellow regents on the board as well. And we need to increase stakeholder engagement through things like public comment periods, designated days at the Capitol, where we are able to talk with legislators, as well as things like town halls and et cetera. And we really need to gather internal and external feedback about regent performance. So we ask ourselves as regents, what are we doing? What can we do better? And then we get constructive criticism from external stakeholders. And I think that as a university, we need to do a serious auditing of our internal processes currently so that we can ensure that we don't have any unforced errors, such as an increase in administrative costs in the future.
Thank you, Ms. Yang. Representative Wolgamott.
Well, thank you very much, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to ask, what would you do as a regent to improve labor relations and make sure that we have good wages for employees at the U of M?
Ms. Arsvold.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, as a former union member myself, I think that conversations with the workers in the setting of providing them the tools they need to get adequate raises and wages, rather. And I also think we need to look at who's conducting those jobs and making sure we're not adding to the disparities of different groups. And they need to be there, so they need to be able to be part of that conversation. Again, I think that, you know, we need to view it as a community, a campus-wide community, in this case, five campuses that are all part of one community, and make sure that we lift up all individuals that are part of that college experience, that research experience, and the experience that we really, as Minnesotans, deserve in our land-grant university. Thank you.
Mr. Burns.
Thank you. Yeah, this most recent situation back in the fall with the Teamsters and the negotiations there was kind of a very angst-producing process. And I think if you were to look at these kind of negotiations historically and where they end up at the end of the day, maybe you could start that as the starting point. I believe their request was 5%, and the university came back with 1.5%. I think the final number was 3.85%. And through it all, you know, I got guys on my team going, yeah, the cafeteria workers might be going on strike pretty soon. What am I going to get to eat? You know, those are the basic needs of a student, right? I got to eat. I got to have shelter. And those are the kind of things that we're up against. And it just kind of drove me nuts. At the end of the day, they came to a decision last minute, like the 11th hour, and I guess that's the way the world works. I'd like to think that it could be done a little bit differently, a little bit more efficiently, and a little bit more compassionately.
Ms. Siegmeier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Wolgamott. I believe people are the greatest asset of any organization, whether you're talking about a university or you're talking about the people that work at your company. The board has a lot of engagement with labor and bargaining units representing people who are doing really critical work for the university, and they need to be respected. I know the value that unions play in bringing the voice of workers to the table and protecting workers' rights and their working conditions. I would commit to honoring contracts and negotiating in good faith with labor unions and welcome and encourage dialogue with these stakeholders. And I believe in the right of workers to organize. I come from a union family, and so I couldn't say anything else even if I wanted to because my husband is here. Thank you.
Thank you. Ms. Wheeler.
Yeah, good. And thank you for the question, Representative Wolgamott. It's a key and important thing. I'm a firm believer in collective bargaining and what it represents in raising the voices of workers, and not just at the time of union negotiations, but throughout the periods in between as well. And I know that the Board of Regents upholds those contracts and is involved in that regard, and I would hold to those principles and the shared values that we both have.
Ms. Yang.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I would agree with Ms. Siegmeier here that the best part and one of my favorite parts about the University of Minnesota and one of the reasons why I decided to come to the university is the people and the community that we get to be a part of. And I just wanted to thank you for asking this question in the first place because I think that it really gives me a lot. It is great that this is at the forefront of decision-making, the forefront of our thought process at the legislature. And I just wanted to say that if you take a look at my track record so far, Fight for 15 was a campaign that the University of Minnesota and the undergraduate student government did where we raised student minimum wage from $10.33 to $15 an hour. And this is not just something that my term and what we've done in my term so far since July 1st. This has been a multi-year, multiple generations of students at the University of Minnesota working together to ensure that students are paid equitably. And then beyond Fight for 15, which was implemented at the start of this school year, we have worked extensively with Teamsters during those negotiations at the University of Minnesota to ensure that our workers, who are literally keeping the university running, are paid equitably with dignity for the labor that they do for the university. And then currently, what I'm currently doing at the university is working with the Graduate Student Union, who is just starting recently, to ensure that our graduate students, who are also another big part of the university community, gets paid an equitable wage for the work that they're doing for the university. And so I think that the track record that I have speaks for itself, and I am really excited to be able to work together with all of these different stakeholders and different groups within the community to ensure that all of us are being paid equitably. And I just wanted to thank you again for that question and thank all of the workers for all the work that they've done for the university.
Thank you, Ms. Yang. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, the Senate clerk will take the roll.
Chair Fate.
Wheeler.
Fate votes Wheeler. Vice Chair Putnam.
Wheeler.
Putnam votes Wheeler. Ranking Member Duckworth.
Arsvold.
Duckworth votes Arsvold. Senator Farnsworth.
Yang.
Farnsworth votes yang. Senator Kupak.
Wheeler.
Kupak votes Wheeler. Senator Murphy.
Wheeler.
Senator Murphy votes Wheeler. Senator Umu Verbaten.
Yang.
Umu Verbaten votes yang. Senator Rarick.
Burns.
Rarick votes Burns. Chair Pawlowski.
Wheeler.
Pawlowski votes Wheeler. Vice Chair Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes Wheeler.
Wolgamott votes Wheeler. Representative Coulter.
Wheeler.
Coulter votes Wheeler. Representative Hansen.
Hansen votes Wheeler.
Hansen votes Wheeler. Representative Hicks.
Wheeler.
Hicks votes Wheeler. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne votes Wheeler.
Cleburne votes Wheeler. Representative McDonald.
Arzold.
McDonald votes Arzold. Representative Knorr.
Wheeler.
Knorr votes Wheeler. Representative Robbins.
Arzold.
Robbins votes Arzold. Representative Scott.
Arzold.
Scott votes Arzold. Representative Vang.
Wheeler.
Vang votes Wheeler. Mr. Chair, in the Senate, there is one vote for Arzold, one vote for Burns, two votes for Yang, and four votes for Wheeler. In the House, there are three votes for Arzold and eight votes for Wheeler. Excuse me, nine votes for Wheeler. No, sorry. Eight votes for Wheeler.
Thank you.
Since we do not have a majority of senators, we will proceed with the top two, which are Wheeler and Arzvold. The Senate clerk will now take the roll.
Chair Fateh.
Wheeler.
Fateh votes Wheeler. Vice Chair Putnam.
Wheeler.
Putnam votes Wheeler. Ranking Member Duckworth.
Arzvold.
Duckworth votes Arzvold. Senator Farnsworth.
Arzvold.
Farnsworth votes Arzvold. Senator Kupak.
Wheeler.
Kupak votes Wheeler. Senator Murphy.
Wheeler.
Murphy votes Wheeler. Senator Umu Verbaten.
Wheeler.
Umu Verbaten votes Wheeler. Senator Rarick.
Arzvold.
Rarick votes Arzvold. Chair Pawlowski.
Wheeler.
Pawlowski votes Wheeler. Vice Chair Wolgamott.
Wolgamott votes Wheeler.
Wolgamott votes Wheeler. Representative Coulter.
Wheeler.
Coulter votes Wheeler. Representative Hansen.
Hansen votes Wheeler.
Hansen votes Wheeler. Representative Hicks.
Wheeler.
Hicks votes Wheeler. Representative Cleburne.
Cleburne votes Wheeler.
Cleburne votes Wheeler. Representative McDonald.
Arzvold.
McDonald votes Arzvold. Representative Knorr.
Knorr votes Wheeler.
Knorr votes Wheeler. Representative Robbins.
Arzvold.
Robbins votes Arzvold. Representative Scott.
Arzvold.
Scott votes Arzvold. Representative Vang.
Wheeler.
Vang votes Wheeler. Mr. Chair, there are five votes for Wheeler and three votes for Arzvold in the Senate. And in the House, there are three votes for Arzvold and eight votes for Wheeler.
Thank you, Clerk. With there being majority in the Joint Committee on Higher Education, Penny Wheeler has been nominated for the at-large district, the at-large seat. I want to thank all of you. Congratulations to those who have been nominated, and thank you all for running. The meeting is now adjourned.